These podcasts are brought to you by the U.S. Fund for UNICEF's End Trafficking Project.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Emily Pazak-Lapchik, and I'm the Program Officer for the End Trafficking Program at the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. Our goals are to raise awareness about child trafficking and mobilize communities such as yourselves to take action against it. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I'm going to start just by talking about how I came to know about this issue. So a few years ago, I was at a conference, and they screened a film called The Dark Side of Chocolate, which I would recommend to anyone who's tuning in today. And I learned about the pervasiveness of child labor in the cocoa industry. And after that, you know, myself and my family, we all started buying fair trade chocolate, and ever since then, it's just led into other things like fair trade coffee and tea and sugar and many other products. So I'm going to introduce our two panelists. We have Rodney North from Equal Exchange and Bama Athreya from Fair Trade America. So if the two of you don't mind just introducing yourselves, maybe how you got interested in this issue, and then a little bit about the organizations that you work for and the work that you do. So Bama, would you like to begin?
Sure. So I have a long history with this issue, Emily. And just to summarize it briefly, back in 1999, there were media exposés of the trafficking of children into cocoa farms in Ivory Coast. And at that time, I was leading the International Labor Rights Forum, which is an advocacy organization that tries to end child labor around the world. And we started to look at not only the issue of what was happening on the ground with these children, but also what companies were doing, because cocoa is, of course, a product that ends up in our chocolate bars, and so we're directly connected to it, all of us who eat chocolate. So we started then to raise awareness among consumers throughout the United States of what was happening, and then we also really tried to look for positive things that we all could do. And that's, you know, part of the story of my relationship with Rodney and his colleagues at Equal Exchange, is that we were looking at Equal Exchange as a company that was really kind of a model for what we thought companies should do to provide ethical products to consumers. Through the many years of work on this and related issues, I also became very closely involved with Fair Trade. And so when Fair Trade International launched its new U.S. national organization, Fair Trade America, this past year, they asked me to chair the board. So I'm here today representing Fair Trade America.
Great, thank you. And Rodney, would you like to share about how you got involved?
Well, if you were to go all the way back, it'd be about 24 years ago when I was living for a while in Guatemala. And I just got a glimpse, a kind of a visceral feel for some of the really serious issues that are behind where our food comes from. At the time, I was more exposed to the conditions involved with, say, bananas and coffee. One thing led to another. Eventually, 17 years ago, I began to work here at Equal Exchange. We were a much smaller company at the time, and we were just doing fair trade coffee. And through that, trying to create and demonstrate an alternative model of trade that would work for the farming communities at at the other end of the supply chain, be it Guatemala, Cote d'Ivoire, Kenya, wherever. And so that was 96, and then it was around 2000 or 2000, maybe later 2002, when I began to learn about the issues of child trafficking with cocoa. We at Equal Exchange were beginning to import organic fair trade cocoa at the time. In 2004, it was fair trade chocolate that we began to import and sell. And so it was around that time, 2002, 2003, that I met Bama and learned about the work of ILRF and also how little the traditional, the big players in the cocoa and chocolate industry were doing to deal with these problems. Mm-hmm. So ever since then, that's now, we're getting on to 10 years. I've been tracking this issue. We're doing our work to bring fair trade and organic chocolate products to market, but also to get the word out through exercises just like this.
Great, thank you. And you know, both of you have such a long history in this, working in this field, so that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring both of you onto this Hangout. So thank you for sharing that background, and do maybe both of you could share a little bit, just an introduction for people who don't, maybe aren't as familiar with fair trade, as, you know, maybe the certification process and, you know, the kinds of things that it ensures and it guarantees.
Yeah, so to start with a very broad brush stroke, one of the problems with our food systems internationally has been the opacity of them. We don't know where things come from, they just show up on a shelf. And even within many of the large food producers or like brands that control what shows up in the grocery store shelves, they have many, many layers between the grocery store, the distributor, the processor, factory, going all the way back to rural Ghana, rural Brazil. And one of the things that we and others tried to do with fair trade starting in the 80s was to sort of to pull away the curtain and to make people aware of the farmers, farm workers, families that are behind all these foods, make people aware of the conditions, demonstrate that we could act with information and make alternative choices through practices like fair trade that could raise and stabilize the income that reaches small farmers, that puts more power into their hands, that gives everybody more information, farmers, the food businesses who are buying and selling, retailers, consumers, activists, because when people have more information, they tend to make better choices and they tend to be on their best behavior. And when you do talk about fair trade and its goals, it's, I think too often it is reduced to the idea of just raising incomes and that, you know, we, Company X, we pay so much per ton of cocoa, when really it is more about that. We believe at Equal Exchange that fair trade should be about redistributing who has power within food systems, both redistributing more of that power and control to farming communities and also to the consumers who can make informed choices, and through their ethical choices, while they can help influence markets to do the right thing.
Thank you, Rodney. I think that's a great introduction, and it's certainly, you know, one of the things I always talk about when I talk about fair trade is when I'm making a batch of brownies, I'm using my fair trade cocoa powder and my fair trade chocolate chips and my fair trade sugar, and it's empowering to me that I know that by buying those products, I'm having a direct impact on the lives of farmers from various parts around the world. So that's a thank you for that introduction. And Bama, do you want to maybe talk a little bit about how it addresses labor issues?
Yes, and the certification. So let me start, I guess, by picking up where Rodney left off, which is, you know, why do we need a label? The system that Rodney described, you know, was put together by advocates around the world who really cared about connecting those farmers in developing countries that were trying to do the right thing and trying to just earn enough to have a decent life, with consumers like you, Emily, who really do, you know, are willing to do the right thing. But how are you supposed to know what you can buy? And here's where, you know, the certification system comes in. So Fair Trade International was established as an international certification system. And it needed to be international because we're dealing with not only consumers in a number of countries, but also producers in a number of countries. And it's really important that those producers also have a voice in the system that is giving you that little green and blue and black logo that is on those products that say fair trade. And so the system was set up to provide, you know, a mechanism by which the farms could be inspected and certified so that farmers who were doing the right thing could actually, you know, be proven to do so. Otherwise, how on earth would we know, you and I, just as average, you know, consumers walking into our grocery store? And then to set up a mechanism to put that logo onto products so that the consumer who really wants to do the right thing but isn't entirely sure what to look for, and there's so many confusing, you know, market claims and labels out there, could know what to do. Now, I think, you know, I was not clever enough to do what Rodney did, which is to have a little thing in the background with the logo on it, but if you go to fairtradeamerica.org, you can see that logo, and you can also actually find some links to chocolate to chocolate products and where you can get them that are fair trade and that you might want to get for your Halloween trick-or-treating this year. Now, on labor standards, because we're here to talk about child labor, so I think that the important part of the story for me is why, as child labor advocates, we felt comfortable promoting that system. And, you know, it's very, very difficult. These are places that are where it's very tricky to verify reliably that no human rights abuse occurs. But what we like about the system are, you know, first of all, you know, Rodney's described this a bit, it's transparent. It actually, you can walk back to, you know, through the supply chain and find those farms and know where they are and know what they're doing. And those farms are democratically organized cooperatives. So those farmers that are part of the fair trade system have a real incentive to hold each other accountable to the standards because they're all in it together. So it's not just like your typical, you know, as I said, there are a million labels out there nowadays. CSR, corporate social responsibility, is a big thing. Every company is claiming to do it. But we can't know for sure because we have to take the company's word for it. In fair trade, you know, the farmers have a voice. They're holding each other accountable, and they're part of the system that provides that certification. But the other part of it, specifically on labor, is that fair trade does have labor standards, including, and you know, and some of this has arisen over the years as a response to these campaigns. They've developed a very comprehensive standard on child labor. So when it comes to child labor specifically, the system does inspect against a detailed standard. And if people want to look, you know, really know more and look at that standard, that's on the Fair Trade International website, which is fairtradeinternational.net.
Thank you so much for that overview, and I think it's, you know, one of my next questions was, speaking, if you guys could speak to how fair trade is specifically a way to prevent and combat, you know, human trafficking, forced labor, and especially child labor, and I know you've already touched on that a great deal, but if there's anything that you could just dig deeper a little bit into that issue?
One of the things that I would mention is, and it does have to do with this transparency, which is a big, when you're talking about cacao, this is a big difference from what has long been the norm. When Obama and others, like Eagle Exchange, were trying to hold the industry's feet to the fire in 2002, 2003, 4, and 5, a repeated response was, it just can't be done. That we can't, it's not possible to know everything that happens in these supply chains. They're too big and messy. And fair trade has been demonstrating, it's like, no, actually, if you try hard enough, if you make it a priority, you can do this. You can know where the cocoa has been and through whose hands it has passed. And through sheer persistence, the industry has been persuaded that, yes, it can be done, and they're beginning to do it in small steps. As of this year, it looks like, depending on who you're talking to, it's about 10 to 20% of the global cocoa supply chain will have some kind of certification. Unfortunately, only a small part of that is fair trade certified. And that's a shame because fair trade, it's not perfect, but we think it's the most rigorous, demanding standard. And it's not just that it's tracking where stuff came from, but that it is addressing the social problems that so often lead to the exploitation of children. And a big facet of that will always be poverty. And fair trade does the most to address poverty in cocoa-growing regions. Also, we should mention, it's not just about cocoa. It's also the sugar and all these other ingredients. And when you look at the chocolate industry, they're not talking about sugar. So we should keep bringing that back into the conversation. And there's been a rash of stories lately about just how problematic the global sugar supply is. So that too has to be thought about, not just issues around cocoa and cocoa farming.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And I do exactly how Rodney is stressing. You know, we're here today talking about chocolate and sweets as a lead up to Halloween, but there are many other industries that, you know, fair trade also applies to and that are also, you know, there's a lot of child labor and forced labor that goes into them. So kind of on that note, can you two speak to how children and other workers have been exploited both in the agricultural industry and specifically in the cocoa industry?
Sure. Why don't I start on that? Because that's really what I've spent a lot of my past several years working on, doing research at a grassroots level with NGOs, advocacy organizations around the world on child labor. And one thing I want to say, you know, I'll talk about Côte d'Ivoire, I'll talk about Ivory Coast, but this really could apply to just about anywhere I've worked. Families do not want to send their kids, you know, to work, right? They do not have options. And that is what we find, you know, in industry after industry. We go to places around the world, you know, get to these poor rural regions. There are no schools, there's no transportation, there's no way to, you know, actually get their kids an education in a lot of these places. Families are extremely poor, as Rodney mentioned, but it's not just poverty. I mean, it's sort of, I don't want to leave our audience here thinking poverty is, you know, sort of the excuse for this. You have to ask about the root causes. Why are people poor? People are producing cocoa for an extremely lucrative global industry. Extremely lucrative, right? I mean, I think we estimate now, Rodney, you can correct me if I'm off on this, but Americans consume about $50 billion worth of chocolate a year.
I'm not sure about that, but we can agree it's a lot.
Okay, I think that was a statistic we saw at some point. I mean, right, a lot. So, you know, so why is it that the people who are growing the cocoa don't have any options, you know, and in the neighboring countries too don't have any options but to send their kids to these farms? So, you know, that's a bit of what the research has showed about how kids end up in child labor. They end up because they are in places where, even if people are connected to a very lucrative global industry, in their communities, they have no options for their children.
So, Rodney, do you have anything you want to add to what Bama has already touched on?
I was going to mention two things, which were that one problem has been that, okay, there has been, till now, a kind of market incentive to exploit children. You're growing a crop that you sell, you, the small farmer, and over 90% of the world's cacao is grown by very small-scale farmers, and most of that in West Africa. And you get next to nothing out of, you know, that chocolate is sold for however many dollars in New York or London and Paris, and you see very little of that. And one way that you can end up with a little more money is by getting cheap labor, by putting to work kids who have come to your community from even more poor countries like Mali or Burkina Faso, mm-hmm. and the kids by hook or by crook are sent or kind of pulled down to the Ivory Coast, for example. Now, so there's an incentive to minimize your labor cost, but also there has not been a disincentive. There hasn't been much of a penalty if you're caught doing this. And very slowly, I think we're beginning to change that by, A, giving the people who have power, the big cocoa importers, processors, and brands, giving them an incentive to do the right thing by creating traceable, audible supply chains, and we hope giving them an incentive to do it at the highest bar, which is to say, creating a fair trade supply chain. So creating incentives for them and right down through the line, because if you're Mars or Cargill or ADM, both of whom are very big buyers and processors, exporters of cacao, if they have an incentive to have a fair trade supply chain, well, they then will need to be working with cooperatives of farmers, and those cooperatives will have incentives to be doing the right thing. As Bama was saying, they'll have an incentive to be self-monitoring. So you're in a group of 1,000 farmers. Together, you own a cooperative, and you got this good thing going. You're selling your cacao for a better price to these fair trade buyers, but you only get to keep it so long as you keep doing the right thing, and you keep passing those yearly audits, and so long as there is no scandal in your community regarding child labor. And to the credit of the fair trade system, in it, unlike some other certifications, you do see farmers and cooperatives getting the boot. Sometimes, you know, they are caught doing the wrong thing because, you know, it's a very big world. There's all kinds of players out there. But fair trade will consistently find those who aren't doing the right thing. They lose access to this market. And that's a significant incentive for them to change their behavior. So those are two things that add to the dynamic of why problems have persisted and how we can turn that around.
Yeah, and if I could just build on that, that was terrific, Rodney. And I just want to add, I mean, one of the things that, you know I've been, I'm sure you too, Rodney, were often asked is, oh, but it'll cost the companies more. I mean, so back to this point about how, you know, there's a lot of money in this system. It just doesn't happen to get to the people who do most of the work. We estimate that you could pay a fair trade premium to all those cocoa farmers in every country that's producing cocoa, and you would see like a teeny tiny fraction of 1 cent, you know, added to the cost of your average chocolate bar. So we're not talking about, you know, some huge amount of money that the companies would have to pay to go from the current prices they're paying, which are really exploitative, to fair trade prices.
And I think that the success of some of us, the earlier fair trade brands, demonstrate that it is commercially, economically viable. So at Equal Exchange, we've been doing this chocolate for since 2000, almost so 9 years, and our sales keep growing. We make a small, modest profit on that. We're still price competitive on the shelf, and we don't even enjoy the big economies of scale of the multinational brands. And you look in Europe, like in the United States, the Divine chocolate company, which is actually majority owned by Ghanaian farmers, and they're a big success in the UK. They're also selling here in the United States. They're showing that it could work. And if you had the big infrastructure of the others, they could certainly make it work. It's just a matter of having the will to do so.
Absolutely. It's a matter of what they want to spend their money on as well. You all, you know, are willing to spend your money on that premium to farmers. There are certain other things that, you know, we don't see you pay for that some of the other big brands are paying for, like very high-priced lobbyists in Washington, D.C., to try to, you know, convince Congress not to regulate them and force them to stop using trafficked child labor.
Right. And also I would add it's not just the price, which is critical, because you can only get so far in trying to change the reality in these farming communities if you're not changing the price of cacao. But besides that, there's things that are more about how you conduct your business. And things that we do and other fair traders do is to shorten the supply chains. It can be laborious, but to work, like we work directly with farmer cooperatives and like with our chocolate products, there's now about six cacao cooperatives we work with in Latin America. I'll be visiting one of them next month, a sugar cooperative in Paraguay. So working with them directly, and it's who you work with, not just working with men and the big exporters, but working with farmer co-ops. And when you work with a cooperative of farmers, a cooperative is a business owned by the farmers themselves, you are in effect shifting some of the market power. Individual farmers essentially have none, but when they come together as a group, they do have power. And like we've been trying to make it possible for our cacao producer, a partner in the Dominican Republic, Conocoto, a very successful cooperative, to make it possible for them to work their way up the supply chain so they're doing some of the processing. And when they do that, they get more control, they get more of the final dollar for the finished product. These are choices anybody in the industry can make if they want to make it. It's provision of credit in advance. Now, some are doing this, like Barry Calabo, a big player in the industry. They're beginning to provide low-cost or no-cost loans. And there's the advocacy. And instead of advocating just for lax regulations in Brussels or the United States, we'd like to see the industry advocating for the farmers, for the kids, the people whose voices aren't heard here in North America or Europe, and they're just not doing that. Too often, the marketing power is really going to perpetuate a kind of a willful ignorance. That, hey, you know, chocolate tastes great. What else is there to know? You know, it has almonds. No, there's there's other issues to know about. And we'd like to see the industry putting some of their marketing heft in that direction.
Thank you both so much for joining us, and thank you to everyone who's tuned in and asked questions and been engaged. And once again, please buy Fair Trade chocolates from Equal Exchange or many of, you know, the other great organizations that are offering Fair Trade products for Halloween. And we really hope to help build this movement, and this Hangout has been a part of that. So thank you all. I hope everyone has a fantastic weekend, and we'll see you soon.
For more information, check out unicefusa.org/endtrafficking.